Wait, I go to Elomia. Comrades, may I once again request that we stop our filler hole so that they don't affect the our proceedings, especially in terms of recording. Because if it rings, even if it was silent, during that time when it's ringing, whatever is being said is not recorded. So, for this 1.5 hours or so that we're going to be here, we can just switch off our phones. So that, I hope all have copies of the program. In case you don't, the galley that you said. Comrade Deputy Minister, welcome. We're happy to have you here with us this morning to have the annual report of the Express, my line of choice, flying from here to Malan. We will start our routine processes introduction. So we'll allow from the side your delegation to introduce itself. The Auditor General's office is here as well. So always introduce themselves. Members of Parliament introduce themselves, then we know who is here. And then we can then engage.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Bulelane Magwanishe. I am deployed in the Department of Public Enterprises.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members of Parliament. My name is Mohokare Zuleke, Director General for Public Enterprises Department.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is George Motema. I'm the Chairperson of South African Express Airways. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members of the Spending Committee on Public Accounts. My name is Inaki Ncham. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the SESPA.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members of the Committee. My name is Mark Shelley, the CFO of
SA
Express.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Khumuzo Modise. I'm the Deputy Director General responsible for Transport Enterprises in the DPE.
Good morning. My name is Erin Vesta. I'm from the Department of Public Enterprises. I'm the Financial Analyst.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Jose Kosara. I'm the PLO to the Deputy Minister of Public Enterprises.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Marina Khi, Company Secretary at Express.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm 7th Street from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good morning, Mr. Sheikh from the Office of the Auditor General.
Thank you. Can we have comrades introducing themselves?
Good morning, Chair. My name is Akiki Rana, a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Wilson, a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Lemba Mende, a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Nkulewa Temba, a member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Tupedosula, a member of the committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Tim Brassett, member of the committee.
David Moss, member of the committee.
Thank you, Comrade Chavakuti. I chair the committee. Minister, Deputy Minister, once again, welcome. Thanks for leading the delegation together with the DG of the department that has a responsibility to monitor and assist the entity under its portfolio. You would have noted that we have had quite a number of engagements with the public entities, precisely because I think over a period of time we were very much engaged with the department. I think the only department that we really took our time on since last year was correctional services, because we thought we needed to really get some of this straight. But to some extent, we have given attention to public entities. Whereas we have not given them the kind of attention that we think they deserve. Also that they, of course, they are very important to government and state. They play a very critical strategic role in our public life. But also that a number that we could not ignore have always, you know, come to the fore, the public eye, for all the not so good reasons, and consistently come to Parliament, you know, looking for this or that guarantee, which compels us as the committee, looking at government expenditure, to say, but what are the issues, what are the challenges with financial management situation that seem to negatively affect quite a number of these entities. So we therefore are engaging on that basis. How do we get closer so that we can understand what the issues and the challenges are, but also so that you could also understand from the side what the concerns of Parliament are arising out of your reports, and to be able to see and check what it is that we jointly can do to try and assist to get things right. Because our main interest is to get things right in the interest of our country. So there will therefore be those areas out which we will seek to engage with the clarity from the side, so that we can then support Parliament from the basis, report to it in terms of what we see, what we observed, but also report in terms of what we think you may need to do to get things right. We have not had much concern about the freedom of records of the Express than and issues with the clients, which have not been very positive. And so that remains the focal point of our concern. But we're looking forward to good engagement around the matter, and finally find each other and have a common way for one another. So I'm going to hand over to my comrades to lead us in this engagement. Comrades, as always, if there are issues, let's hold them until the comrades presenting is done with his or her questioning, and then we can make follow-ups so that we don't disrupt the flow of the comrades who are assigned. So I'll hand over to Comrade Smith to kickstart our process of engagement.
Thank you, Chair. Just for clarity, are you suggesting that I go through point 1 to 7, or are we going to do 1 and then allow other members to add and then 2 according to our program, or should I do all of them?
No, do all of them.
Never mind, Chairperson. Chair, maybe for the record, Deputy Minister, 2010-2011.
Well, it's one comment. Can I just take it from you? I think one point that I left out is that as we engage with the entity or the chairperson, you can note issues at the end of the engagement. We'll give you some time to reflect on the issues. But if there are issues in the course of the engagement that you feel you want to respond to there and then, we'll certainly be flexible at the end. We'll be able to give you some time to respond. Yes, comments.
I was saying that for the record, 2010-2011 you had a disclaimer. 2011-2012 you had a disclaimer. 2012-2013, 2013-2014, and 2014-2015 you had qualified opinions. And I want to take you then to page 52 of the annual report. If you don't have it, I'll read it for you. I'm not looking for page 52 of the... And now I beg your pardon, page 98 of the annual report, note 52. Page 98 of the annual report, the Auditor General says, I'm going to read from the second or the last sentence, because I think that epitomizes the problem that this entity is faced with. The AG says, I experienced difficulties, delays in submitting, and the unavailability of requested information during the audit due to poor record keeping in certain areas and lack of adequate reconciliation that are viewed by the entity. And I think that sums up the real problem that we have here. Everything is summed up in a sense. So I just thought for the record, let's put that so that we understand the context. And any of my questions are going to be premised on that finding. Page 98, note 52 of page 98. And I say that probably is the basis of the difficulty that this department faces. Also, as I always say when I engage with the entities, you know, if you are unable to or unwilling to respond, it's better that you don't say anything than to mislead Parliament. Let's put that up front. If you're unable to or unwilling to, you rather not say anything than to give us something that you think we want to hear, and in the process mislead this committee and by extension Parliament, because we've read these reports. So I thought if I put that on the table, Chair, we then will be able to move. And maybe I should then start by the obvious one. And ask the entity, when was the internal audit unit established? And is this unit capacitated?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, over the years, as far back as 2006, F-Express had an outsourced internal audit service. But as the years goes, the business decided to co-source the services. We had an in-house internal auditor, as well as an external internal auditor in the business. Now, the question as to whether this department is adequately resourced. Currently, we, in the process of employing, we have about, and management will correct me, we decided as a board that considering the number of issues that we've picked up based on the 2014-2015 audit report, that a very senior person needs to be employed into that department. I think the board was not satisfied with the fact that some of the issues relating to the weaknesses in the internal controls are things that can be picked up on a quarterly basis or monthly basis, and management making sure that there's a process of ensuring that some of the key issues relating to the audit opinion were able to resolve those issues as a matter of a monthly and quarterly process. So we're in the process.
So we have a call source that is with internal people, also as external people.
Correct, Chair. Thank you.
If we kind of going to mix the next three, Chair, because I think they're interrelated. I'm talking about inventory, property, plants, and probably the most important one is the going concern. On, if I get that page of yours, on one of the pages here in your director's report, I think you, you confidently say that that you are not very worried about the going concern concept because you've got sufficient finances. Page 89. Yeah, you've got your resource, your financial reserves, and so on. Yes, bullet point 89. The directors have satisfied themselves that the company is in sound financial position. Page 89, and paragraph number 8. As the board, in your report, you say you really don't have too much of a concern. You've got sufficient resources for borrowing purposes and in a sound financial position. And therefore, you do not have a problem about the going concern aspect of it. However, on page 91 of the annual report, you don't have to turn to it maybe all the time because it might take time, but I'll read them to you. Page 91 of the annual report, the AG says, in terms of your property plans and in terms of your inventory, I was unable to determine, if you take just point number, the property and plans on page 91, talking about the inadequate record keeping. He said, I was unable to determine whether any adjustments to the corresponding figures of road bills, balance accounts, or accounted for as part of property, plant and equipment stated at 287 million, was necessary. So he was not sure if those adjustments were necessary. Similarly, on inventory, he says, I was unable to confirm the balance, and this is an inventory. That is on page 92, number 7. I was unable to confirm the balance of inventory, which was stated at 175 million, and the previous year, 85 million. My audit opinion on the financials for the period to 2014 was modified accordingly. My opinion on the current period's financial statement is also modified because of the possible effects of this matter on the comparability of the current period's figures. My understanding of all that the AG is saying, and he will help us if we are wrong, AG. Really, the AG is saying that he's not sure that your balance sheet is reflecting an accurate position in terms of your inventory and in terms of your property. That's what they say. Right? If we're not sure what our assets are, I'm not sure that we can confidently say that we have a going concern. Because, AG, you'll help me, if our liabilities exceed our assets, in essence, it means we're in serious trouble. And the possibility of this entity going forward is questionable. So I'm asking, how do you, as the directors or the shareholders or the board, How do you confidently tell South Africans that you have no concern that this entity can move forward on its own and sustain itself when the ANC has such an indictment? If you could just explain that to us. Because we're asking this question. I think the chairperson correctly said that we've not focused too much on public entities. And the bailout situation in South Africa on these type of things has reached a position where we've got to take ASARs. Now, the question is, if the AG says he's unable to verify your balance sheet, why are you telling South Africans that you are in a healthy financial position? If you could explain that to us. You say that on page 89, I think it is. The AG says something different on page 91 and 92. Which position is the accurate position?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think one needs to add that if you look at the opinion of the AG, it does indicate on page 92 that save for the possible effects on the matters described in the basis of qualified opinion paragraphs, the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position of South African Express. Now, the
Which paragraph is this?
Paragraph 11, Chair.
Paragraph 11,
okay. Now, when directors in terms of the Companies Act have to issue an opinion, if you look at the page, Honourable Smith, that you referred to, which is page 89, that the growing concern basis, there is assumptions that are made by the directors on the basis, and I think there's bullet points to that effect, that these are some of the factors that the directors, in accordance with the Companies Act, had to take into consideration to look at the issue of going concern. Whether, based on the company's assets, as they are, save for those two items that you referred to, which is the inventory as well as the receivables, which is something that one would need to get to, and explain the basis of the adjustments around the receivables as well as the inventory, which is...
I think maybe this is exactly what you need to do, because this question... precisely because of those two items, they cast a cold shadow over the assertion that the going concern issue is not a matter of concern. And indeed, that first line that you read from the auditor, you know, that English, basically says that save for, meaning that except for, unless changed because of, otherwise, everything else is fine.
Yes.
Unless or except if these two paragraphs have a negative effect. So, that creates a question mark. And I think that's the reason of this question. That with this question mark, how do you confidently say we are fine when there is this question mark anyway, which can fall either way?
Correct, Chair, and thank you for pointing that out. Chair, what I was trying to explain is that the basis of the director's opinion in that regard, insofar as it relates to the basis of business committee's obligations, was based on the extension of the guarantee as well as the new guarantee that would have been provided by the business. And that's the point that I needed to emphasize there, that the going concern basis, where we sit at a board, you know, to look at whether or not this business would be able to provide.
Okay, so I hear you to be saying your going concern satisfaction is based on the guarantee. That's another thing. That the guarantee makes you comfortable that you remain in going concern.
Chair, with respect, say for those two items that I needed to address, Chair.
Right, comrade.
Can we? I don't know how we proceed here because we're not debating it. But can we say from our side that we think that I think that if we are unable to verify these are our assets which we use to generate profit or generate income or generate whatever it is, and this is our inventory, if we are able to verify that independently, SCOPA is very reluctant to accept what he says. Let's just put it on the record. We are very reluctant because the auditor is saying, and he's independent. If I think that these figures were adjusted and therefore I'm unable to say whether in fact you've got access to the value of 279 million or if you've got inventory to the value of 175 million. Because if he's correct, and this is the point we're making, if he's correct and we do not have those assets, the question then is, for how long are we going to carry and go on? Because this issue that you're raising of guarantees is exactly our problem. That we can't have a state-owned entity that relies on government guarantees. It should really be self-sustainable. So that's what I'm saying. I'm not sure how to take it forward, sir, but I think from our side, to the chair of the board, we're a bit wary about
I think, Comrade, we are in agreement with him, except that he wouldn't, I guess, he's a bit reluctant to put it in such stuff as straightforward terms. That's why I said, except for those two. And we're saying, no, don't blind over those two. They are not a foothold, they are a stumbling block. Until and unless they are resolved, we can't say with certainty that the entity is a good concern. But now you have introduced the actual basis that the state guarantee gives them the confidence that even if those two items are in red, have the state guarantee, therefore, will remain a good concern. I think for us, we want this to be spoken to in those very simple structures, then move forward.
Good
yes.
Oh, is it me or you?
Oh,
we can allow him to speak.
Chair, with your permission, and respectfully so to Honourable Smith, I needed to get into the details in terms of those two items, because those are the items that we don't want to avoid. And I agree with you, Chair, in terms of
then go to the
Chair, and with your permission, may I request the support to deal with those two aspects? With your permission.
But you see, whatever he's going to say, the fact is, there is unfairness.
Yes.
Unless he's going to say, no, this fine by the age is wrong, there is absolute certainty. If there is uncertainty, it means there is uncertainty.
I can see, Chair.
So all we need is to ensure that you are able to account in a manner that the age is certain. Once there is certainty, either positive or negative, then we'll be sure that this is the position.
Point is,
so I don't think there is anything that should be said. What we need is certainty. That's all.
Thank you very much, Chair. Could somebody explain to us, that's what I asked originally, do you have an internal audit unit? And is it capacitated? Nobody said to me, they have 10 people, they've been working there for 10 years and so on. Because this whole issue around uncertainty borders on the fact that you do not have sufficient audit evidence. You don't have source documents. You know, even if you do a petty cash reconciliation, so even if you use a reimburse somebody with petty cash, you don't do it unless he shows you this is what I paid for milk and this is what I paid for whatever before you give to him. Can you explain to us why is it that you don't have support documents? Because that, sir, is why I'm so adamant that you're not able to tell me whether this is accurate. Because if you don't have source documents, you can't tell me that those are your figures. So can somebody explain why do you not have, or why did you not present, maybe you have, why did you not present to the AG your source documents at the time that you were doing the audit? What was the problem? That you were unable to produce evidence to verify what we are now arguing about. Can somebody explain what is the issue on the record keeping in your institution?
Chair, with your permission, I request the CFO to just deal with the source. I'll deal with what the board has done subsequent to identifying those key problems.
I'll allow him to.
Thank you, sir.
Because
there can be no explanation that would justify why it would. But it's fine, no, let talk to I just want to underline that so that there should be no question that you can explain that away because it is wrong.
Certainly, Chair.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It is not just to deal with the inventory and the routers. If you read the paragraph, it says, briefly, during 2014, on page 91 and page 92, the statement starts with the words, during 2014, I was unable to, and then again on note 7, during 2014, I was unable to. What this talks to is that the auditors were satisfied as at the 31st March 2015, which is the closing balances of both property, plant, equipment and inventory, that the figures disclosed on the face of the balance sheet were correct in all material respects. However, due to historical issues and going back to, as you mentioned, the disclaimer in 2010 and 11 and 11 and 12, which relates to the revaluation that happened on inventory and on PPE, we put in processes to identify and correctly value these items so that as at 2015, those numbers are fairly represented. The wording is very specifically related to 2014. So the qualification revolves around valuation as of 2014. However, as of 2015,
all right, well, that's fine. Let's go to the issue of record keeping. We'll check with the Auditor General of the Court here so that they can confirm your information or they can clarify the position.
In terms of record keeping, everything is on the system. There are issues in terms of having to get valuations, independent market valuations on certain spares and rentals. And again, to your earlier comments around delays in obtaining documentation, we rely on an outsourced system provider for jet fuel and various other services, and with delays in obtaining documentation from them, the audit process calls for us to deliver documentation in a certain time frame. We were late, we submitted it subsequently. It does, however, mean that we need to sharpen up, which put processes in to make sure that this year that position does not arrive again.
You know, let me go back to what you said at the beginning, sir. And AG, as much as we respect him, we have our own minds as Parliament. But if you're saying to us that the opening balances were unverifiable, your closing balances cannot be verifiable. Because your closing balances, as I understand it, would be opening balance of activity gets the closing balance. That's how I would understand it. Unless you're saying, when you sample to check, is this bottle there? That's fine. That is a physical asset verification. What we're talking here is about the balances. Now, unless AG is saying that subsequent to that statement, AG, you are satisfied that the opening balances for 2015 were correct for this financial year, therefore the closing balances are correct. Unless that's what he's saying. I can't accept that you're saying to me, it specifically talks about 2014, because 2014 is the beginning of the 2015 year. So that's what I just wanted to put on the table. And we've been through the thing with many other institutions. Let us just say this to you, that when we talk to you, we've spoken to 35 departments, and we see distress over government. It's why I said when I started, rather than mislead us, let us then accept that this is a challenge and we need to fix it up. It's very simple for me to say to the AG, please verify these things. And you hold your back and we might have a problem. We're raising it as a challenge, we want you to fix up. Also, sir, you know that at a certain date the AG must present his financials to Parliament. You know that. To say to us that at the time it wasn't there, it subsequently, it's not an excuse, it's not an answer. Because it should have been there in the first instance. Now, what we should be saying, and that's why I asked the question, how capacitated are we? I don't think you must come here and justify the wrongs in this annual report. We want you to come and tell us what is it that you're doing from today forward. Because if you come to justify the wrongs, we will win every day of the week. We will win every day of the week, sir.
on the basis of the audited report. What happened was, yes, this was there, this is what we're going to do going forward. I want to say to you, sir, that since the AG report in August, can you say to us that if the AG went to do an interim audit today, he would or she would find all the support documents that they require? And that's the question that I'm really asking. Are there systems in place as we speak? Because this thing has been done probably August last year. I don't know when it was signed off. So in the period subsequently, can you guys assure us that all support documents should be available for the AG to verify? Yes or no? And if not, do we have systems to address that? That's what I'm asking in this respect.
Thank you, Chair. The comments are well taken in the positive spirit that you've intended for, Chair. I think what we've done from a board's point of view was that once you identify that there are internal weaknesses to the system, you need to put measures to make sure that your quarterly monitoring from a board's point of view would yield the positive results that are required. What we've done in the finance department, we realized that the finance department was not appropriately resourced. We had a number of junior people, and we insisted on management to have a new structure within the finance department and employ a number of senior people in that area. I'm aware that the CFO has employed a specialized reporting person in the department who's very senior. We've employed a senior finance operations person with a 10-year aviation experience because we realize that there's a need to be that area. Also, the management account specialist was employed in the finance department because we wanted to make sure where we're sitting as a board that there are appropriate people in that department to be able to deal with all these issues that have been identified by the Auditor General. Thank you.
No, good morning, Chair. Can I guide you to help you to move forward? You know, our chairperson in this committee will tell us to give you the patient, not what would happen. The patient today is the question that he's asking. And we need answers to be genuine with you, not what they're going to be in the future. Tell us, like, why is record keeping not there? That's what we're looking for, and that's what is insisting on. So for the best spirit of meeting, give us answers more than future plans. That we can explain in portfolio committee. Here we're dealing with an auditor general report, and we need answers. What has gone wrong? If you are going to tell us about your future, I don't think it belongs to this meeting. It belongs somewhere else. I don't want to question this. Dealing with public accounts, give us answers.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Chair. And that we've spoken about, Chair of the Board, I think also has a direct implication on your tax obligations. Because on the basis of your calculations, you would have posted a net profit of X, or a gross profit of X, you would then deduct or provide for tax and then show your net profits. And the AG is concerned again about these adjustments that we're talking about. I see that you show a tax obligation of 222 million rand on page 99 of your balance sheet. So 2216 something for 2015 and 2016. Is there any assurance, or is there anything that you are doing as a board and senior management to get to a position where we are relatively comfortable that this deferred tax is as close as possible to the reality? Is there something that you're doing? Can you give us some comfort that's... I'm not even talking about that figure, because as I say, the AG has questioned it. But for me, subsequent to the AG having said, I am not sure that tax figure reflects the reality. What is it that you've done to either
satisfy the AG and Parliament that this is the correct figure, or adjusted it accordingly. What is it that we have done on that basis? I want to be able to go out of here and say to South Africans that indeed SA Express is a going concern. But all these obligations that we have could change that picture. So is there anything that you guys have done to satisfy yourselves as the board? Because, I mean, it's your duty in the first instance that is a correct reflection of what we owe the taxman.
Thank you, Honourable Smith. What we did was we requested and implemented a system where management had to go and employ a service provider to give an assurance support. We employed a company called DECO. They specialize in inventory counting, because the issue of the tax is impacted on those two items, the inventory as well as the rentals. Now, unless you resolve those two issues, you're not going to get your computation right for your tax purposes. So we requested a verification of all the assets so that board is satisfied that there is proper and independently verified accounts. That process is ongoing, and we expect to get a post to make sure that those two items are addressed.
Could you give us some sort of time pressure as to when you mentioned the name of the company, as to when that will be done, and would it be reasonable for Parliament to expect that in the 2015-2016 financial year, I'm not sure, 2015-2016 financial year is done already, isn't it? And if you still have somebody doing something, does it mean it's 2016-2017 and looking for time pressure? And to add, we have a serious phobia of consultants and contractors. We understand that this is a specialized field. We have a serious phobia with consultants and contractors. So if you've given them a brief to do this in 6 months, don't come back to us next year and say they're doing it in 18 months. That's why we're asking for the time frame. When do you expect this to have been, when do you expect the report and to be able to adjust? Is need to adjust the books?
We expect a report for the current financial end of 31st March. That's a process because the Auditor General is busy with an audit process. So we included that because this report under review is for the past year. So we needed to make sure that process starts immediately so that by the time we do the audit for the process.
Do you have the report already, or are you going to have it next week or next month?
No, as a board, we don't have the report.
When do you
have the report? We expect that by 31st May when we report to the shareholder.
Right, that's fine. And will that report impact on the 2015-2016 audit process?
Chair, I'm losing. In what sense will it impact the previous period?
No, I'm saying, because audit is being done,
yes,
for 2015-2016.
Correct.
Now, on these two items that we're talking about, for which you have an outside company that has a deal, that I'm saying the report that you'll get in May, the information, will that be used to answer the questions for purpose of audit for this just end of financial year?
Thank you, Chair, for the clarification. Correct.
Let's move on to receivables. And refer you to page 92 of the annual report, paragraph 9. And again, Deputy Minister, you need to understand that these are all things that have an impact on the going concern. Because here we're talking about assets in essence, isn't it? Receivable assets in essence. And on the basis of your assets, both current and other assets, you then say that we are in a good position. However, the AG says, because of your calculations that you disagree, you overstated your assets by 46 million rand. That's what the AG says. You've overstated your trade receivables by 46
million rand.
Can somebody talk to, first of all, whether you agree with the AG? Number two, how is it that you deviated from standard calculations of receivables? And three, what is being done today to ensure that if indeed you deviate, it doesn't happen going forward? If you can't overstate your assets and then expect Parliament to accept that you are an organization in good financial health. So if you could explain those things to us, we would be very grateful. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. That overstatement refers to the maintenance reserves. And the maintenance reserves relates to the money that sits in the kitty within the store. Now, what the Auditor General is saying is that you've accounted for that money, whereas you're not supposed to do that before you put in a claim for it. Oh, there was a difference of opinion between management and the Auditor General. We accept what the Auditor General has provided in audit opinion. I think in order to resolve the matter going forward was to get to an agreed process with the Auditor General to say perhaps we need to look at each and every lease, because when you lease an aircraft, you pay a certain amount and you pay as and when you utilize for the process of your maintenance.
So it's not clearly, I mean, look, there is a process. I think what the AG is saying is that unless you have claimed, the claim is accepted, and the money is paid to you, you can't therefore claim that it is yours when it's still with you. It's a simple procedural issue. And I don't want to go to the extent of thinking that you are aware of the processes. This was done deliberately to try and balance the books and make them look good when they are not. Because you can't recognize this as an asset when you have not, from a procedural and legal point of view, you have not followed the process to ensure that that money is claimed. I mean, it's a simple as that. Comrade, is that?
Thank you.
I asked the question, do I agree with you? That it's as clear as that. The question that I'm asking is, and I'm glad you said that you've now reached some sort of agreement with the AG in terms of how we record this thing. The question that I'm asking is, are we confident now that our assets will be accurately reflected going forward? Because this is historic. Going forward, are we happy? I'm glad you're saying that you've reached some sort of agreement. I don't know what that agreement entails. But we don't want the AG to come back next year and say to us, I am querying the recording of your receivables. So, going forward, are we happy that this matter has been resolved?
Correct.
Because of reporting.
Correct, Honourable Sir.
We shall await the AG's report and hopefully the Portfolio Committee and the Executive Authority will keep an eye on it going forward. Because unfortunately we see these things 18 months after the fact, Deputy Minister. Hopefully you guys will go forward. I mean, going forward will look at it. Can I move to point number five, then, Chair? Irregular expenditure. And we know that...
why doesn't it do this? Because I see... I thought this had been corrected to me. If you look at item 9, it also talks about the regular expenditure. Can we dump that so that it can be dealt with later? Yeah, sure.
No problem, we will deal with it then. Let's then move to strategic planning and performance. And that, I think, directly becomes a core responsibility of the board, I would imagine. And let me refer you to page 81, Chair. Page 81 of the report. Annexure B talks about operational performance. And
And the next C talks about social impact. And then we'll go to page 83. I think that talks about overall your 45 key performance areas. Standard and SUV is your operational performance. That page reflects 13 deliverables, want of a better word, and only achieved 5 of them. The last column, progress tracker, I think is what you headed it. 13 targets, you only achieved 5 of them. That's 38%. Are you with me? On page, you are with me. Page, beg your pardon. That is on page 81 of your report. An extra B. It's not pasted on there. Is it pasted on there? Yes. Oh, the bottom right, yes, on page 81, yeah. If you look at the very last column, achieved, 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 not achieved, not achieved, that column. There were 13 that I counted when I was doing my preparation, and of those 13, only 5 were achieved. That represents a 38% achievement. On the following page, there were 11, you only achieved 4, that is a 36% achievement. And you yourself indicate that on the following page that you've only achieved, of your 45 targets, you've only achieved 56%, so I would imagine that's just over 25, maybe 30, I'm not sure. Why is it that we are failing so dismally? Let me start by saying, if we set a target as Parliament, we expect you to come here and say I've achieved 100%. Quite honestly, you can't come and say we've achieved 90%. The target is 100%. In your case, 38, 38, and by your own admission, those 38 and 36 are my calculations, but by your own admission, you've only achieved 56%. Can somebody explain to us what is it that is your target? It's your threat plan. It's your social compact with South Africans. And you come and you only achieve 56%. How come?
I think the point is well taken, Honorable Smith, with great respect. Obviously, when you agree on your target objectives, you look at a number of issues impacting on your inability to reach your targets. But that in itself should not be an excuse. So I do concede in that regard, Honorable Smith, that we fell short of meeting our...
No, we are aware of that. Why you fall short?
Chair, if you look at the key strategic objectives, which are mainly commercial in nature, one would realize that a number of factors impacted on, especially us in airline business. We depend on a number of cost factors which drive the business, such as fuel. Are load factors as a result of competition, those...
I would expect you to say, you see, on this one, this is what impacted us, forget it, on this one, so that we're able to not talk to them in broad and generalized terms, but we're able to say, on this one, this is why we failed, on this one, this is why we failed. I think it will assist us, because a broader general explanation does not make us any wiser in terms of why only these were achieved and these are also not achieved.
The point is, who determines the size of objectives?
They are meant by the shareholder with an agreed to by the board and implemented by management. Yeah, in that regard, with your permission, just to deal with item by item, may I request a CEO to...
How long would that take us? Come with Vincent?
If
you know, you asked the question that they should explain. I think from our side here, we're raising the issue. We're really on the same side. All of us. Because it's about service delivery.
What I think we don't want to see as Parliament is for you to come back with a 56% achievement rate going forward. Because then as the board you must be removed. Did you understand what we are saying? As the board they must be removed if they come with a 56% achievement. It's just not on. Especially, Chair, because Deputy Minister, I would imagine that your acceptance or your generosity in granting them the budget that they ask for is based on what they are promising to deliver. So give you R1 million because this is what you need to deliver. However, at the end of the day, that R1 million hasn't bought what we all agreed to. There are two options, Minister. Cut the budget by that percentage or ask them to give us the money back, because my next question would be, was it fruitless expenditure? Why would I give you money to deliver and you come to 50% product and expect me to save a value for money? That's the point that we are making, Chair, that we can't willy-nilly go on and give people money on the basis of what they promised to deliver, come back 18 months later and say, we are sorry we didn't deliver it, and expect that South Africans must keep quiet and say, well, it's fine. It's not your money, as Boy will tell you if he was here. It's not your money, it's not my money, it's not my wife's money or your wife's money. We need to produce for every taxpayer here. I think that's the point that I thought, Chair, that we want to make around your planning. Because quite honestly, and again, it's why I think we called you Deputy Minister. The Portfolio Committee has to be able to, on a quarterly basis, monitor that this thing is done. You also have to, I would imagine quarterly, they must report to the executive authority, they're able to manage it. It can't be 18 months down the line that we get a 30% pass rate. And then still expect us to approve a guarantee. So we are not impressed in terms of the performance of SA Express. The final point that I want to make here, on that one, I think that one is then done, because the regular expenditure will be dealt with somebody else. Is around the financial statements and annual reports. To say, suppose that in the first instance, somewhere the Auditor General laments the fact that your financial statements, I think number one, were late, and number two, did not follow the procedures. I think that's what he says somewhere. The financial statements contain in it some material misstatements, which are subsequently corrected. The financial statements submitted for auditing were not prepared in accordance with section 55(1A) of the PFMA and section 29(1A) of the Companies Act of London. We have a CFO, and somewhere I read of, I think it's a board member or somebody that runs his own or her own auditing firm. I think it's somebody in your body, or the CFO. But somewhere when they were explaining, Mr. Shelley, the CFO, has run his own accounting and consulting practice for 10 years prior to joining SA. That's what the report says. And it gives us comfort that, oh, we've got competent people. It's not casting aspersion on you, Mr. Shelley. But the AG says that these things were not in accordance with the PFMA. They were not done timeous. They were not in accordance with section 29 of the Companies Act. I must ask the question, how did that come about? How did it come about that we have such qualified individuals and they don't comply with the Act? They don't comply with TFMA and they don't comply with the timeline. Why did that happen? Why did that happen? Because it's for me inexcusable that we could have people that are so qualified and yet the AG makes such an indictment in terms of the presentation of your finances. Could somebody explain that to me or dispute the AG findings? Because I'm reading from what the AG has told Parliament. Could somebody just explain that to us?
In so far as the AG's report on the Section 55 of the PFMA, I think the fate of the board to submit by 31st of May was purely an administrative issue, and I'm not giving an excuse. The new board, which I chair, were appointed on the 22nd of May, with two board members continuing and the rest of the new board members coming in place. Now, that itself then resulted in a situation where the approval required before the Auditor General can look at the financial statement could not be obtained within the days, because you get appointed on 22nd May, you're expected to submit by 31st May, so I had to induct the new board members, including the Audit Committee itself. Now, the Audit Committee gets appointed by the shareholder. So when the appointment is done by the 22nd of May, so it resulted in us expediting the process of appointing the Audit Committee itself. So that purely, that administrative issue created a burden for us not to approve the financials before the Auditor General can look at them by the required period. However, I am not giving that as an excuse.
That's a timing issue and administrative, and maybe we learn from that in terms of when we change the board. It doesn't explain the misstatements. It doesn't. Whether it was you, sir, or a different board member, the institution must be. The obligation to present as fairly as possible, and that's why when you said earlier on, the AG said it's a fair representation bar 102. It's really not an excuse, because I'm showing it to you now that it has, in his words, the financial statements contain some material misstatements. Do you understand what we're saying? These are material statements, and AG will tell you anything between 0 to 5, they normally disregard because it's not material. I think that's their FCG or something like that. But when you say material misstatements, you're saying to us that, look, really, he's not sure that these actual, or the balance sheet is an accurate reflection at that time of what is being presented to South Africa. And that can't be as a result of an administrative or a timing problem. That's pure incompetence, negligence, or something else. But it can't be a timing issue. And the question is, and I hear you saying that you've now appointed competent people. But the question is, why didn't you have competent people? And I'm saying you, because I'm talking to you, even if you're not there last year. Why were there no competent people in SAA? And why, Mr. Minister, would you give somebody a guarantee if you're not sure that the person did it, maybe, not the minister, the DG? Why would you agree to give somebody some money if you're not sure that he would be able to be a reliable custodian of our money? Why would we? Why are we doing that? Why are we giving money away and we are not sure that who we're giving the money to are reliable custodians of our money? And there are no consequences. I think my colleague is going to talk about consequence management, but it's just a problem. It's just a problem that we dish out money and they are not even capable, those that we're giving the money to reflect accurately the financial statements. Because this is what DG, this is what Minister, I would imagine financials use if they want to borrow some more money. This is what we will have to go and present a balance sheet to say, on the basis of this, give us more money, whether it's government or whether it's the private sector. And if we've got financial statements that, quite frankly, we're not sure reflect the true position, according to the AG. And then we're concerned, Chair, because if this was a bill, if it was only today, we would say, well, there's a thing. But I started off, my first comments were, you had a disclaimer, you had a disclaimer, you've got 5 qualified reports. This has to change.
under your watch, things have to change. And we'll be watching for that next year. Thanks, Chip.
Right. Thanks, comrades. Is it? Comrades, do we have any questions to ask on the areas of focus that the committee can have? Comrade Boy, Comrade Ekane, Comrade Mente, Comrade Krengwa, Comrade Ross. Yeah, and that's all.
Good morning, Chair. I take that Honorable Vincent. He's saying things have to change. That's good English to me to hear that. Because unless you see on the two questions that he had on the inventory, you tell us on how much we're spending around outsourcing those products in video temptation. How much are you spending? No, this is not for personal money. That's why I assume this is money going to the taxpayers. And in our interest to know from you, how much are you spending when you outsource? And you know, as a chair of the board, you're supposed to make sure that this strategy runs properly. What do you feel about the cost? Do you think it's a genuine cost? I mean, because as of now, you don't have results, and the taxpayer keeps on giving out its money and paying. You and you pay this particular individual who doesn't deliver. And the image, you see, it's not your images when South African Express doesn't perform very well. It's the image of the country and the safety of our own people. What do you think about this particular process? You see, you can't just ask you in there. Tell us about the process, tell us about now. You want results now. It's after doing this 21 years. Tell us exactly what is your problem and how much does it cost for you to be outsourcing?
And then let's get the responses to any other questions.
No, thanks, Chair. I just want to make a follow up on the 56% that is strategic objective issue. I just want to check because the chairperson of the board has indicated in this meeting that these strategic objectives were determined by both the shareholders and yourselves. And hopefully at the time, you knew the capacity that you had that is in the demand. And also, I think you knew that they were achievable. And now my question, and also that they were reasonable, because obviously you agreed to them. Now my question is, why were they not achieved? Because obviously you agreed to this, you looked at your capacity, you agreed that with this capacity I can achieve 1, 2, 3. You didn't say subject to, you said I can do this. Now the question is, why didn't you do that? Because to me, unfortunately I don't find any logic that's in that. That you agree to something, you undertake to do it, and at the end of financial year, you say no, I couldn't do this because of the constraints that I have.
Can we get a response?
Chair, thank you. Chair, we go through the questions, and again, I would ask for your permission to get the CEO to intervene at whatever point that's necessary. I beg your indulgence in that regard. Thank you. In so far as it relates to the outsourcing, we not... And the question is how much. One is not able to give you a particular figure at this point in time. But what I can assure you is that our cost drivers are not based, and we've not outsourced our services. So the cost drivers relating to the business are things like your flow, the things like your IT services, which is provided by SAA as a result of the business that we have, because our booking engine, we utilize SAA. So we don't outsource our services. In fact, as part of our cost drivers, as agreed with the shareholder, part of our austerity measures was to make sure that we bring most of our services internally. They're very limited, such as what I refer to as the internal audit, where you have one body from outside to provide the assurances that we need. But most of our services are in-house.
You see what makes me more interested in you, sir? It, for instance, asked you and was taking to your inventory, taking you to the technicians, the people that are in the office, people that are outside. Now that's money, you see, it's not taking out of your personal pocket and you donate them. And I'm not sure that any company is taking donation from you on those basis. This is what I'm asking, that costing. So, you quit outsourcing or what? I'm asking how much is it costing the taxpayers to pay for that service that they're providing. I mean, that gives somebody else. As my colleague already talked, we're talking about capacity. What I'm trying to establish from you, do you have capacity or not to run the board? Or what are you trying to do? Give me the cost.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, may I ask the CEO just to give us the figure on that outsource service? The outsource service we refer to is that of the rotables and inventory, so that we can have an independent verification of that, because we want to resolve this issue. Thank you, sir.
Chair, thank you very much. The GECKO contract, which is the company that's helping us to count this market and make sure that it balances, is $267,000 out of the budget of about $350 million. So it's a quarter of a million. And it's for a period of about 3 months. So they come in right at the beginning of the closing of the year. They started around the beginning of March, and they will work with us now until we're fully reconciled the spares that I invested in. Thank you.
On the comments.
Right. Thank you very much, Chair, and the Chair of the Committee. Some of the targets, and I don't want to make an excuse, some of the targets were, there was, if you look at the bulk on the first page of the operational performance, the bulk of that is cash, related to cash in terms of the income statement, balance sheet, and so on. Those, the moment you don't make your profits and your numbers, then automatically they link to each other. You know, if you miss the for example, the EBIT, if you miss the profit line, you like to miss the EBITDA, you like to miss the net profit line. So they are very linked. So the question is, how did you not meet it? It's because there's actually been a lot of entrants in the market. Some of them actually entered in during that year. I don't want to mention names of other lines. And they operated within our space. And so we dropped the number of passengers that we carried, and that impacted the profitability of the business. Now, what we did cause that is we implemented what we call austerity measures, so that we can improve the profit line of the business. In about September of 2014, which was halfway through the year, when we did the review, we were falling behind when it comes to profitability due to new entrants, due to, I'm talking 2014, the price of petrol then was $100, and actually only dropped around November down to the 40s and 50s. But before that, it was, and we had predicted a price, and it just, thanks to rent dropping fast and the fuel price actually operating at over 100, and some of our numbers were, I don't want to call them external factors, but they were, and they do affect us directly. And so, yeah, so those are some of the factors. But I just wanted to talk through what we've done. What we've done is we've implemented something called a plan called the Austerity Measures Plan. And the Austerity Measures Plan are to address some of the things, some of the inefficiencies in the system. And they cover at least about 16 deliverables that we monitor on a weekly, monthly basis going forward since about September 2014.
perhaps a follow-up. Yeah.
Maybe my question would be, when did you implement those austerity measures? Because in terms of, that is the Auditor General's report, he says you don't have standard operating procedures and they're not monitored. That's the reason why you couldn't touch your objectives.
The austerity measures were effective from the 26th of October 2014. And they've helped us. We've seen a huge difference. I mean, a simple thing, we were heading into a bigger loss, but we saw between October, November, all the way till March, the numbers started improving in the previous year. And we've improved a lot of processes. We've worked with different focus groups, and of course we've spoken to our people to champion some of these interventions that we've implemented, and we're seeing the difference.
Alright, compliment.
In the chair, my next observation is what disturbed me on the organogram of the SAFS is only two men, and I'm quite disturbed about that. Women have got capacity. I don't know why they're led by men only. Secondly, your internal audit. I want to give you an opportunity to prove that what Ucomrade Vincent, in fact, his assertion in terms of your incapacity when it comes to proof of document is not actually a worrisome fact. With a number of airports in South Africa, I would like to think that you centralized everything. Your petrol is not paid by each airport. Your food that is supplied in an aircraft is not paid by each of them. It's centralized, it's just a matter of delivery. And therefore, it shouldn't be a problem or an issue for your documents to be available whenever the Auditor General requires. Now, I want to give an opportunity. How come that if you have centralized documents and your centralized operation, how come is this a problem that documents are not found or are not available? Because not each and every airport is doing same operation, and then you have to collect at a later stage and meet with each and every airport's management. How come is it a factor when it's centralized delivery? I just want to give you that chance. Perhaps you will be clear in time, or you will understand what I'm doing. What he's trying to ask you, why are documents not available when you have a centralized operation?
Chair, I think the first question, in respect of agenda, I'll leave that to you.
Yes, sir. It was just for the person calls. I don't belong here. I'm talking the manners.
Thank you, Chair. But I'd like the CEO to respond to that question in view of the fact that the process that we follow is linked to South African Airways when it comes to things like fuel. And so, allow the CFO to respond, because it's a little bit operational in the sense that the document collation is something that falls with that portfolio, with your intelligence.
Cheers.
Thank you. Correct, we do have centralized systems. However, refueling of aircraft happens at every single station, and the paperwork that then flows through from the pilots of each aircraft who signs a full uplift slip through back to Johannesburg, back to SAA, because they do the fuel procurement. It then goes through a matching process and a payment process, and they score all the fuel slips, all the invoices,
and so on. So a lot of the delays are around getting the fuel slips and the backing documentation for that. What we've done to address it going forward is we have moved all the documentation to us, our own offices, so we will retain those. So we will not have to go through the process of being requested for documentation, us requesting SIA for documentation, and then having the delays. We would put a plan in place to ensure that that is eliminated.
Okay,
and then my last point, so in terms of the capacity and management side, with regards to page 81, the operational performance, there is the KPA improve operational efficiency. You are split it in three, not achieved, and then the other one is achieved. I want to practicalize this one, so that we can have a very good understanding. And I don't want to cast any aspersions on anyone, but I have a worry that this KPA will never be achieved. At one stage, I took a flight.
Which page?
Page 81.
And I would say
operational performance.
Chair, I will pray that your report coming. The page numbering must be registered. I'm struggling to see.
Noted, sir. It's
81.
Noted.
It's 81. Alright.
Okay. Page is on the.
Alright.
On the KPA improve operational efficiency. It's KPA number 2.
Alright. That's fine.
Okay, the practical example here is it talks to passenger load factor and daily block. In the East London airport, boarded an aircraft with less than 10 passengers. And as I was sitting there, when they said boarding is complete, I looked at the aircraft, it's practically, literally empty. It's going to leave. And I was asking myself, how much is SA Express going to spend on an aircraft that is here to Cape Town with less than 10 people? Wasn't there anything that could be done? And just before that, there was another aircraft, I won't give a name, leaving from the very same airport to Cape Town. Can't they then liaise with other companies to say, if we have less than a certain amount of passengers, we will then lock them into another aircraft, even if it's not within the SAA company thing that SAA link and all that. I would assume that the SAA Express has got a big amount of waste placement. Less than 10 passengers leaving East London to Cape Town, just like that. And it was literally empty. So that's why I'm saying this KPA will never be achieved because it's the case on a daily basis.
You had enough leg room.
Chair, noted. I think that optimization in terms of the comment you made is something that we will look at.
But the point is, this sounds more like common sense. Why has this not been realized? Well, somewhere in your report you're talking about closing down, loss-making routes, this, that. But why wouldn't this have crossed all your educated minds, all of your minds? Unless if there are hindrances, then talk to them. Unless if you're all not sure if they would convince you, you know, to say, no, the reason we don't do this is because of ACP. But surely, to take a flight from East London with about 10 passengers, the cost involved, unless it be some explanation that it should give. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
Mr. Chair, the CEO will respond to that, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. What we do is, like any other airline, we work out on a trip. suppose this way and that way, it's not a leg. We have a leg. Leg is one way. Let's take the same case. What you would have found out, honorable member, is that the leg coming in was full. The leg going back is empty. Now, there's absolutely really nothing. If you were to give those patterns away, you still have an aircraft that you have to locate somewhere. So you give the 10 patterns away, and then you can't have an aircraft sitting, which is why the next target, which is utilization daily block hours. If now we're going to have an aircraft sitting in East London because it's waiting for passengers that are not there at that particular time, you'll have a wasted aircraft. So we have to rotate these machines in a way that as long as it is a trip and the day, they are operating above break-even load factor. So we got that, we determine it by trip, by time, by price, by a whole lot of things. We've got a whole team that consistently works on network planning, yield management, revenue management, scheduling, that twist these things. We listen to the market. I mean, what you find out is, if you find that flight is consistently empty, we then look at the later flight. Was it going to come in empty or go at full? And then we make a call on those things. So sometimes the seasonality, maybe, you know, it's a whole lot of different aspects. And it's something that gets monitored every day. And it's got the complication of, you cannot have a grounded waiting for passengers for a long time. We have to utilize them. They're very expensive machines, and therefore we cannot keep them grounded. Now, that's a slightly different model, but I don't want to go into that, from low fares, cheap, old aircraft kind of a model. But ours is slightly different. We've got a model called FAT principle, which is frequency, availability, and time. And we have to honor that. It's one of the models that airlines use.
All right. Okay. No, that's fine. Yeah. And what?
No, thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to use the same system I used yesterday. The flu is still coming somewhat slightly, so I've been audible at some point. Chair, please advise. Chair, maybe in light of what Honorable Smith has spoken about earlier, about the difficulties of the AG, you know, the submissions and the unavailability of requested information. Was this the first time that this had happened? Before I move on, as soon as that was said, was it the first time that the agent had the difficulty?
Mark, no, you can respond to that.
Okay, thank you. This is not the first time. However, it has improved from previous years. The previous year, we moved premises, and there were more logistics around it. It's improved, and it can improve further this year.
Okay. So, nothing new. That's my difficulty. And it speaks to systems. But on the issue of targets, item 43 on page 97, and this is where I'm worried. The number this time is on the left of the page. Item 43. The corporate plan did not include the strategic objectives and outcomes agreed upon by the executive authority in the shareholders' compact or key performance measures and indicators for assessing the entity's performance in delivering the desired outcome and objectives as required by Treasury Regulation 2911. We have just come from page 83 is on the right, where the Endesa Express achieved 56% of its target. The chairperson earlier on said, gave us the process which is followed in determining these targets and objectives. But now, as you said here, the executive authority in the shareholders' conference was not there. So, I want to understand, the 56%, does it take into account that particular assertion or finding by the AG, because then it would speak to the reliability of the 56%. And maybe the bigger question is, why wasn't it included to begin with before we get to the nitty-gritties of whether it's accurate or not?
Thank you. Honourable Chair, the delays around the signing of the Shareholders Compact. Shareholders Compact is a negotiated document, and hence we get held responsible for those strategic objectives. So it's ordinarily negotiated between the business and our shareholder. So for that particular reason, the delays around it. However, Honourable Chair, as this is the pivot ordinarily not in my appointment as a chairperson, there may be other reasons why and the CEO may be able to talk to
when you saw the final reports, where you didn't make a query.
No, I did.
And what was the answer given?
I did, chairperson. Hence, I stated that the delays between the board and the shareholder in signing the shareholders' compact.
Was the cost? Well, was that the cost? Was that high diplomatic flows?
That's my understanding, Chair.
Okay. So that, then, whose targets are these that have been addressed here? If the shareholders' ones were not included, and the ones that have appreciated things, then whose targets are those? Who engineered those ones that, alright, here's the targets we're going to be assessed on these. Whilst the technical what's going on between shareholders and everybody, whose are these targets? That were not able to achieve, just a very unsatisfactory level, by the way.
Yeah. But if, Chair, if you look at the comment, the strategic objective are still agreed between ourselves and the shareholder, and they are contained in the shareholders' comment. The comment, from a professional point of view, what the auditor is pointing there is that very same document that was agreed, which talks to the strategic objectives, was not included in your corporate plan in line with Treasury regulations. Not exactly that it wasn't there.
Okay. But then why was it not included if it was there and agreed upon?
Chair, with your permission, may I ask the CEO to respond to that particular aspect, Chair?
So it means that, your initial assertion that because these long negotiations were not hold, because it means the plan was long negotiated and agreed upon?
Not necessarily, Chair.
No, I saw that. The president is due respect to you. We're talking about targets here. You are not in your mind to work on assumptions. And I have advised you here that give us answers. Don't deep in assumptions for us. We want answers so that we are able to work on what is in front of us. And what when the auditor general negotiates outside here, it's not our business. Our business is quite specific that we have a document in front of us from the auditor general. As we need to get clarity for the sake of our public and for the sake of their own money. Now, if you want us to work on assumptions and become politicians, we keep you quiet. We can entertain that. We can entertain that and help them be able to take their results. Give us answers, please. What is the issue of time? If you listen to your CEO there, he gave a very, the Honorable Pastor, a very clinical how it operates. But the problem that we're asking ourselves is, how does that become a target? So it's quite clear for us in our minds that you are not giving us an honest view for us to understand why you have not achieved particular targets. Don't put yourself in our shoes, because we are guided by the PFMA, what we are asking you. And you need to deal with us. Please, don't play around with politics. You can play that very well, but it's us.
All right.
Fine, Peter.
I'm sorry, Chair. I want in my head to be very clear. And really, given that English is my second language, I'll be subject to correction. But here's my understanding. And it's a statement to put there. The corporate plan did not include the strategic objectives and outcomes agreed upon by the executive authority in the shareholder context. It did not. So what key performance measures and indicators for the entity's performance? So the indicators are in the entity's performance if those of the shareholder are not there. Because I listened very carefully to the process which the chairperson outlined.
And Chair, the second point is I would like to put it to Chairperson. Then she signed off on this report. And I would really be with him to accept fully the responsibility for accountability. She signed off. And then, so this one, then if the shareholders was not there, who's been there? Because Chair, because
what that student says is that in the corporate, plan, what is the corporate plan? Can you just take that? Because that's why I was saying that in earlier answer was probably wrong. Because the agreement was there for all these performance things, but what he said is that it was not in the corporate plan. It was not included in the corporate plan now. So I was rushing to check if this performance is a part of the corporate plan or exactly. What would that entail in terms of where this is supposed to be located?
Well, thank you, Chair. Subject to the briefing that I have received since I joined the department in December last year, in relation to this matter, I think the Chair should have identified one key issue, that the issuing of the guarantee was the key issue, because the guarantee determines as to whether the entity would be in business or not. So the issuing of the guarantee happened in March, and it's only then that then the shareholder compact, which is the compact on contract between the shareholder and the company, then the process of negotiating it happened. And normally the shareholder compact comes with a package of deliverables, including consequence management in case those deliverables are not achieved. And thereafter, and that process also has to go through the Minister of Finance. And the briefing that I've received then is that that process took long up until November 16th. And thereafter, the corporate plan was not updated. I think that was the explanation that you should come through. Because then it tells you that at the time the company was going through financial difficulty.
So it's fine. So the performance objectives that are here, that we think that we utilized, where did they come from? Who's they, or were they then included subsequent to the agreement and implemented subsequent to the agreement?
Yes, I was trying to highlight what has caused the discrepancy.
Going past here.
Normally, the corporate plan is submitted in February, and that happens on the basis, because year to year you plan, and through the shareholder company, that is existing. But what happened during the course of their business at the time, when they were going through a financial difficulty, they needed then a guarantee for them to continue. I'm just trying to highlight it.
No, I hear that. What I'm asking is, the performance objectives that are here, where do they come from? Are they the outcome of that negotiation that were implemented retrospectively, whatever that would mean, or the entity developed its own performance objectives in the absence of the shareholder compact?
It means those ones were designed on the basis of the earlier compact. Normally the compact is reviewed annually.
So in the absence of a reviewed compact, the previous one holds?
Yes.
I think that's all right.
Thanks, Chair. Then the question that follows, the 56% achievement,
It's on the basis of the old content, on the basis of the reviewed and new content. I would then say to the committee, it is based on the old content. But I think I need to also highlight that the new content was largely based on the conditions. Meaning the changes that were supposed to be added were the conditions that came with the guarantee.
That's fine. Whatever the content of the newly agreed contract was,
on page 83, and now I'm not sure whether I'm asking this on the basis of what's old or new, but on paragraph 2, the last sentence on page 83, it says the targeted profit of 69 million due to operational and funding challenges. The airline achieved a net loss of 132 million rands. So, what I want to then, for me, that speaks, I mean, the thing goes, failing to plan is planning to fail. But if you do plan, at the very least, be in the ballpark of what you intended, you'd set out. From a projection of 59 million rand to about three times in the opposite direction, 232 million rand, so it speaks to that problem. And I would imagine this is now on top of the guarantee. And I'm just leaving that nature, explaining to the consent to say this speaks to the problem, which I think has become part of the ripple effect and problem. So I cannot affect. This in good faith. It speaks to a constructive, to a conception of whoever set the target, what had informed it if we took three steps in opposite direction. That's what worries me. That very admission there, whether you achieved anything, as if that, at the end of it, is the conclusion. Whether the blame goes to the shareholder, to the department or to the board or to management, but surely that speaks to the problem. And in fact, I don't think it's acceptable by any measure of standard. That's it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a comment and a question. My comment is with regards to the ability of SAFS to continue as a going concern. And we've noted the dependency of SA Express on state guarantees. And also, of course, we've noted the material misstatements in the financial statements, etc., and auditors' report. But going forward is again a concern. It seems that you are currently in negotiations, and that's also that you've indicated on page 89 of the annual report, that you are busy with negotiations with funders and that you intend to pursue negotiations in the future. Can you give us more information with regards to this specific negotiations as you've indicated on page 89 of the annual report?
Let's continue before we take the last comments and then move on to
I think the negotiations with the funders is in relation to the working capital. You get a guarantee, you go out in the open market to try and raise funding for your working capital. So it's purely intended for that year.
Now, I wanted to get more clarity from the CEO. You say, or what I was going to ask you really is, can the auditor general achieve very fine the statement that is made? Is it first and first is it true? How it's processed as well. But must understand that we are working on the report provided by the auditor general, not on the basis of what we say. But is there truth in the matter that is presented in front of the committee for us to be able to look at this law on those issues? Of the fact that, well, it's not written here, and it's been
provided by you, and be giving the Auditor General's report. Can the chairperson check with the Auditor General? Is that true? Is it what the state of things are?
Okay. So that's fine. Well, in your hands.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, you know, Mr. Hall, I'd like to find out who's accountable first. So, if we could just start with the executive management. I know Mr. Nshanga is here. Mr. Nshanga, how long have you been in your position? I noticed that this is based on the information from the I don't know if you have the briefing notes from AG, but I'm assuming they're correct. Internal audit, is that still valid?
The internal audit.
The internal audit and the executive management, is that still vacant? My information is that the position is still vacant. Nobody occupies the internal audit.
Correct. However, the interviews were finalized recently. I think management is waiting for approval.
How long has it been vacant?
Chair, let's bring that good question into context. We're working together.
Chair, it's not a conceptual question. How long has there been no head of internal audit? It's a very simple answer.
Just over 9 months.
9 months. Thank you. All right. I see the company secretary, ma'am, and you now the company secretary, so that is validated. Wonderful. My question is going to be directed at the chair of the board and as the CEO. You can decide who answers. I'm sure that the chair will grant me leniency. Because I noticed Mr. Nshanga so far has been very quiet on these matters, and he's in fact the CEO. Right. Were you briefed on, well, you certainly have the annual report. Did you have any briefing on what we would be asking you today?
No, not at all. Chair says to be invited to the committee and to deal with this report.
All right. But you knew from the annual report there were compliance issues.
Correct.
So why is Miriam Otwela not here? Unless I'm mistaken, she is. She is your, you don't seem to know who she is. She's your general manager, legal risk and compliance. I'm just wondering why this lady is not here, sir.
I think the CEO will respond to that.
I would really like that answer. Why is the person in charge of compliance, your entity, not here today?
Actually, honorable member, we've actually never brought the executives. Every time we come to the office, we bring the CEO.
When you come to Parliament.
Sorry, when you come to Parliament, we usually bring the directors of the company, not the executives. So that's been the practice, and so that's what we did.
Okay, can I please advise you in future, bring head of compliance along? Because that is one of the major, in terms of what I'm going to ask you questions on, compliance is one of the major issues. We need to know, I'm not the kind of member that just can talk to the chair of the board. I like to talk to other members, that's why you bring them here. They talk about us moving Parliament to Pretoria because of the cost of these delegations. But then entities come along with delegations and two people speak. So in future, if you have an engagement with us, please be the people that we want to speak to. Alright, with due respect to everybody here who's made a lovely trip to Cape Town, it's nice to speak to people that are going to be answering our questions and not persons that are superfluous to what we're doing here today. Thank you.
Noted.
Right, let's look, Mr. Shelley, you here. I note if we go to page 77 in your annual report, it refers to remuneration of the executive management. And I note from there that Mr. Zed Ngwenya, he was terminated on the 31st of March 2014. And Mr. Shelley was appointed on the 1st of February 2015. Could you tell us what took so long to find a replacement CFO? And in that time, who ran the finances of the entity?
Mr. Shelley, he actually joined us, I think, on the 15th of April. But an acting CEO, and then
We went through the process of recruiting and interviewing, and he was confirmed as CFO. So
Mr. Jimmy was there for the year, okay, as an acting CFO. Right. Then I also note from that, and these are just some asides before we get into the actual meat of the argument. I see that, now correct me if I'm wrong, the financial year for any entity or department starts on the 1st of April, is that correct? Okay, so these are, this is the annual report for 14-15, is that correct? Am I correct in saying that? This is the annual report for 14-15. Correct? No. Right. So then why is a figure from the 13-14 figure in this report, i.e. Mr. Ngwenya's salary, his remuneration, which if he was terminated on the 31st of March 2014, that would have been the last day of the previous year. Why is the figure of just over 1 million here? Was that some sort of settlement payment to him that carried over into this period that we're dealing with? Or it's going to lead to my next question, but if you could just tell us why that figure from previous period is in here.
I can assure you that there was no settlement, but I think CEO needs to respond to that honourable member. I need to correct that. My understanding at the time when the CFO was leaving the business was that there was no settlement as such. But I think the CEO does indicate to me that I think there was a 3-month notice payment, but he needs to explain to that to respect that. But what I was referring to is that as far as the board is involved, we've never
sent that. No, that's fine. Okay, let's get the explanation.
When you leave and you give notice, there was a, it was in the system until the 31st, and then of course we prefer for him not to be in the system post that date, and therefore the company policies has the you know, we give him a 3 months notice. There is a little bit more money that's in there.
What do you mean, give him a 3 months notice?
There is a bit of an exit package that is paid.
Alright, see, if I may continue, this is a, I'm sorry, you sound very unsteady, CEO. Unsteady on your feet, I think I've caught you here.
Yeah.
Could I ask the next question then, is why did Mr. Ngwenya leave? I was the language in your report does not say resigned, does not say moved on to better things, so he's terminated. So why was Mr. Ngwenya terminated? And let's get into why he was terminated, what has happened to him since, has there been any consequence, court matters against him, criminal matters, tell us why he was, because I'm also assuming that Mr. Ngwenya was there for quite a while.
Correct.
And did Mr. Ngwenya, and I'm just going to put you a couple of questions to get some context and give me an answer. If we look back at our performance, I agree with Mr. Shin that about 5 years back you guys were getting disclaimers and you improved just to qualified opinions. So that is an improvement. But for 2013, 13-14 and 14-15 qualified opinions, what did Mr. Ngwenya preside over that? And has that got anything to do with his termination? So if you can just answer the context there, thanks.
If you look at the issue of the irregular expenditure, it has to do with what is referred to as an extension of the scope beyond the normal procurement process. What the business found at the time was that the CFO, being Ms. Ngwenya at the time, did not take due care in ensuring that the scope of a particular service provider who was providing a service to the finance department, which was the balance optimization at the time when we were doing the application for the grantee, that the scope went beyond the normal procurement process. And it was agreed at the time that due to that lack of of applying the right to a public government, which would have required for a person in his position that he should exit the business. And I think the payment that the CEO is referred to relates to that exit of him out of the business.
Okay, so Mr. Ngwenya was terminated on the basis of irregular action in terms of contract management. Is that fair enough to say?
That's fair.
Okay, so if we can quickly jump to page 135. And please correct me immediately if I'm wrong here. On page 135, we have listed irregular expenditure. Expired contract, no procurement process. We're going to get into this in detail later, but are you with me? Page 135? Right at the end of the report, correct the last page. Last page of the report. Are any of those amounts listed there to do with Mr. Ngwenya's termination? Or the other matters completely? We're unfortunately not given much detail on this, which we'll get into later, but are any of those related to Mr. Ngwenya's misconduct?
No, I think it refers to one, which is the 3.2 million. Which is a scope extension, which I referred to. Which
There's a 3.4, there's a 3.3. The irregularity. You said 3.2. This is 135 in the report. Last page of the report. It's very good stuff that people who have got bored of this report don't want to read anymore. On the last page.
Yeah, I'm on that page.
Okay. I just want to know which one was related to Ms. Ngwenya. The 3 point?
The
3.4, 2014. Okay, so that's the opening balance.
Yes.
Always nice to have an opening balance on your regular expenditure ledger, eh? Alright, should be an opening balance of zero. Anyway, so what we're saying then, if we now go back to page 77, is that Ms. Ngwenya was terminated with the sword of Damocles of 3.4 million rand hanging over his head, and he was given a settlement or exit amount of a million rand. Is that how your entity works?
Yeah.
Can you explain that? Because I'm sure that if I went out into Plain Street and explained that to a taxpayer, I would not be extremely impressed.
Maybe the investigation revealed that the services are rendered, and they were rendered. We got confirmation of that. So it was not fruitless and useful. It was just the procedure that was followed.
Okay, can I interrupt you there? I know you don't have your head of compliance here, and I know you haven't had an internal audit person for a very long period of time. So maybe you haven't read the PFMA for a while. A breach of the PFMA can result in criminal action. Getting bang for your buck doesn't mean anything. The PFMA is there for a reason. So please, for the rest of this hearing, please don't say we got value for our money. Because it is the start of the slippery slope. We say, oh, we got value for our money, so it doesn't matter. Okay. Let's please just attest that. It's extremely serious. You can't say, well, you got bang for our back, so therefore the man's off the hook. The question still remains, before we even get stuck into the meat of what I'm going to do, is why would Mr. Ngwenya terminate? He was obviously terminated. The language he used is terminated, which means he was obviously dismissed. Why did he leave with a million rand? That's my point. If he had 3.4 hanging over his head. Why was he... Okay, let's make it easy. What disciplinary processes were followed? Was any criminal action taken against him? Then I can move on.
No. As far as I'm aware, no criminal actions were taken against Mr. Ngwenya.
Was he dismissed in terms of the disciplinary process?
I think an exit of... I'd like to use your language, which to be correct, because that would be the fair way of defining it, because whether you exit a particular point in time, but that's the start of a disciplinary process. So I would definitely agree with that.
Are you sure? Do you have those figures at your fingertips, those facts at your fingertips? Was he disciplined and terminated as a result of this process, or was he asked to leave?
No, he was, I'm sure of the conduct, but he was not disciplined in the sense of being hauled before a disciplinary process. So the exit was an engagement as part of
of initiating the disciplinary process. But however, he was never brought into an inquiry with a disciplinary officer being appointed to adjudicate on the matter.
So was he threatened with disciplinary action and then resigned?
I wouldn't say he was threatened.
Can you tell us what actually happened?
Yes. Yeah.
Can you reenact it for us? Because I'm very confused.
I was not a chairperson at the time. I don't want to use that excuse, but I want to let the CEO to.
Chair, on a point of order, you can't allow a conversation to take place. You're supposed to intervene. Because now I don't understand what's going on. I was sitting in the same portfolio meeting where I was more else in the board meeting of that person. Can you please intervene and share the meeting?
Chair, I hear what Honourable is saying, but this is, you know, this is why I do things. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. If I get a clear answer, I'll move on. And that's not Honourable Boy's
fault. Can I protect myself? I'm just saying, I saw that the Portfolio Committee is for all of us, not for one individual.
No.
And I'm just asking the chair to be able to guide. That's how you chair, myself. All of us are
protected. Yeah, that's okay.
I'm just asking, can we all be given some sense of what's beginning to take place? This is how an official must answer to you, or is it how it is?
All right. No, that's fine. I think if the chair of the board was giving straight and direct answers, would have made some strides. I think he's trying to squeeze answers, direct answers, out of him, chair. CEO, can we explain what exactly happened? Was this man disciplined? No, it's not. Was he threatened with a disciplinary process that forced him to leave? Was he pushed?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to follow the chronology, Mr. Bonya started on 1st of December 2012 as the Chief Financial Officer, and then worked with us until a certain board meeting where the matter had been brought to my attention that there were issues around a scope creep on one of our procurement processes, which I took to the board. The matter was well investigated. We even hired, or we used the services of a legal firm to have an investigation. And then the board took a decision, and then my responsibility was to proceed with the disciplinary. The disciplinary was prepared, and then Mr. Mayor requested that we put ways. Then we looked at the risks in line with this thing. And then we looked at the risks of a protracted legal battle, having considered some of the matters, especially around the fact that we established through our process that the services were, I'm just telling you what happened.
Yeah,
then,
I love this line.
You know, established that the And you'll see that the letter is framed to say, should find any criminal, you know, offense later, we have the right as a company to bring the matter back into action. We pursued that. We actually realized that, and we spoke to the service provider, and we spoke to the people internally that there is the service provider, and we said, okay, based on that, we won't pursue the matter further after his departure. So that's the
okay. Thank you. Right, so it was a settlement agreement. Okay. Could have told us in the beginning. Then the next question is, where's Mr. Ngwenya now? Do you know?
Not officially. Not officially. He's not working with his express.
Well, of course, no, he's resigned. But Jesus, where is he now?
Best of my knowledge, he's working for the CIOC CDT, which is the Sishen Iron Ore Company, the Community Development Trust of that, which is not related to us now. So that's just unofficial.
The reason I ask is we have a pattern of government of people living in the before. All right, okay, let's proceed then. I'd like to just touch on issue of the going concern from a different angle. Many of my colleagues have made a lot of it. The issue about the going concern is, you know, and I have a lot of sympathy. not a first-hand knowledge, but I know that running airlines is an expensive business. You know, even Richard Branson said opening Virgin Airlines almost sunk his entire fortune. It's an expensive business. That's, are we not realistically in the position? If you take into account, you know, you've got the page 89 where the board says there are a going concern, and then you have a look at page 100 of the report, where at the top it says operating profit or loss. Operating profit was only 14 million, if you're with me there. I'm talking about purely revenue now. Revenue and expenses. Not taking assets into account, because it's scalable to my next point. And effectively, if you take everything into account, 132 million rand loss. If you didn't have the guarantees, it wouldn't be a going concern, huh? Is that fair to say?
In the absence of a guarantee?
Yes.
Correct.
Thank you. In absence of the guarantee, it's not a going concern.
I think, Mark, if you could just respond.
It wouldn't be a foregone conclusion, but it would certainly have been a lot more difficult to raise funding from banks. excuse me. Our funding is not procured from anywhere other than commercial banks for which we pay interest. So we do not get allocated to the budget or anything of that nature. So it was a requirement to renew the existing guarantee that had been issued previously, and to meet working capital requirements, we determined that we needed the amount of the guarantee that was expected.
Okay. The follow-up to that is, so, you know, and I understand that's a difficult one because the guarantee is that it's a policy issue. But obviously, without a guarantee, it's tough to raise working capital. Keep up the business run. Okay, so, now when we look at frivolous and wasteful expenditure. Now that's back right at the end of the report again, I think it's on page 134. I'm jumping around a bit on the point two. The frivolous and wasteful expenditure amounts to 23 million for the year that we're talking about. And that relates to penalties and interest. So, doesn't that exacerbate the fact about the issue of a going concern? Because it seems to be a cash flow issue. Well, what causes the cash flow issue? That's what I'm going to get to the bottom of. Is it simply a matter of, as my honourable colleague mentioned, that there were only 10 people on the plane? What causes the cash flow issue? Can we just get into that? Because that's obviously the source of the... So if I can just go put in that. If we look at 2014, we see it was 33 million, and it's gone down, thank you very much, to 23 million. What were the factors involved? Was it simply because it was a better financial year that enabled us to avoid penalties, or were there methods that were put in place that helped us avoid some penalties? You know, I'm just trying to get to the root of why we're picking up those penalties. That's it. And the interest.
Okay. The penalties and interest that are listed under frivolous and wasteful. Had we had sufficient cash resources and we were utilising overdrafts, they would have formed part of normal interest. But due to the fact that there are the cash flow constraints, pick up penalties and interest from suppliers, such as payments that are late that levy interest. So it's just where the interest is incurred. So it doesn't exacerbate the problem. We would have had the interest charge anyway. It would have been on borrowings rather than creditors. In terms of our cash cycle, our revenue is processed by South African Airways. We receive cash once a month on the 18th, and we then fuel the schedule directly. All services received from SIA schedule, and we then receive that cash. We then pay creditors. Obviously, things like lower load factors on certain routes, as we've seen the impact of competition, fare attrition would impact on cash generating capabilities. However, the reason it's dropped talks to the CEO about the idea of steerage measures that we put in place. And that talk, that is indicative in the operating profit line where you see the 2014 where you include a net loss from operations of 25 million. For the next year we made a net profit, albeit small, 25. So that's a 14 million rand system at that level. And that's the cash generation. So we were generating more cash, able to settle more creditors, not interest charges.
And is your foreseeable future looking better in that regard? If you'll be able to bring us down for next year?
It is looking better. Obviously we don't have the final results for the year to the end of March yet, but early indications are that the results will be better than the previous year. Certainly from a cash flow perspective, our creditors book has reduced significantly. And it's a combination of low expenses due to austerity measures and managing the cash flow.
And that's because we've shared this publicly. If we look back to, of course, these are unaudited financial numbers, and I'm going to use the first quarter, not now, because I'm now in the middle of finalizing the numbers. If we compare September 2015, month end, we will see the swing has been about 150 million rand from a negative to a positive bottom line and an operating line. So the austerity measures have shown that, well, they've impacted the business positively. The market has become tighter, so we continuously monitor what is going on. But some of the initiatives that we, basically, if I take the next slide, and your question was, what's causing the negative variance? It was a lot of things. Too much spending on food, labor bill was high, and then of course by flying inefficiently, low load factors and so on and so on. And then the austerity measures talked through what we did. We aligned the flying. We actually did what Honorable Mentor was talking about. We identify those flights that are flying low. We combine flights, we reduce them. For example, from Copenhagen, we're flying 8 to 9 times a day, we reduce that to 7, but we try to find the right times to fly so that we can still maintain the passengers. We reduce our meals, we move from, I think with meals we saved from December, we're sitting at about 50, a year before we were sitting at about 53 million spent on food, it dropped down to about 25. So we did a few things that actually have helped.
Sorry, we're studying in place.
I know. Sorry.
No, we just get a little bag nuts.
Exactly.
So that's good. What I was trying to get to, and you've answered the question, is that was any particular one person responsible for the fitness and wasteful expenditure, and it appeared that it was circumstances. All right. And hopefully you'll say that. You know, our question here is not to harass or intimidate or cause trouble, it's to try and improve the situation. It appears that that's getting better. Right, if we can go back to page 89. And, you know, I'm going to be a bit disrespectful to the board. I apologize in front in advance. But the board here says, under paragraph 8, and I'm not going into the cover of the guarantee situation, but the board here says, starting with the first, second, third, fourth, fifth line, the directors are also not aware of any material non-compliance with statutory or regulatory requirements or any pending dangers to legislation that may affect the company. So let's look at those words. Not aware of any material non-compliance or statutory or regulatory requirements. How can, in all fairness, the board say that? That's on page 135, last page of the report, sets out the regular expenditure, which is all due to non-compliance. Everything. 6.5 million rand was all due to non-compliance. How can the board with a straight face say, we're not aware of any non-compliance, but in the last page of this report you'll find 6.5 million rand worth of non-compliance. So can you maybe explain that statement?
with a straight face. I think perhaps one looks at the wedding in terms of the company act, but if you look at the corresponding party in terms of what you just pointed, honourable member, it does then say as board, and I think one takes a note to that effect, that when you provide your director opinion, it is quite crucial to look into some of those issues. So I do concede on that point that if you look at the statement on face value with the straight face, it really made needed some adjustment to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I know that this document for public consumption, they must read to be understood, not by yourselves, but by somebody who is not a director. So it is always in your interest to express yourself in ways that are quite clear and easily understood.
Thank you, Chair. Noted.
Okay. Chair and CEO, whoever can help you, let's move on to regular expenditure. If we go through, and let's really focus on page 135, you'll stay there for a bit. Unfortunately, the Pillar report itself and the briefing notes I got from the AG and our own research doesn't give us much detail. So I'm hoping that you can either give us that detail today or can commit to giving us full detail. But what I'm talking about is in the block on the top under point 39 on regular expenditure, you have expired contract, no procurement process followed, tender irregularities, procurement process not followed, contract exceeded, okay, condoned, that's another matter. Can you give us some detail on what happened in each of those matters? Who was responsible? Was disciplinary action taken? Because that's another issue that I have to deal with, is consequence management. So let's include consequence management here.
Okay.
So could you just give us a breakdown of this, if you're able to?
Okay.
And I'd like to know who, and I'd like you to mention names if possible, who, what, how, what action was taken.
Thank you. Thank
and please, let's again agree that we're not talking about bang for buck. We're talking about the regional compliance regulations. Thanks.
Thank you. The CEO will answer that question.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Where appropriate, of course, when there were tender regularities and other processes, appropriate action was taken. We can provide you with I can provide you with at least confidentiality, because also sometimes it's a legal issue, but we can provide you with what they did, what were they all about, what were the contracts. Some of these contracts some of these contracts are critical contracts of strategic benefit. For example, I'll use this one as an overall example. A contract with SAE for us is very strategic. Sometimes it takes longer to negotiate because of certain disagreements, and so continue longer. We know that then that we cannot do without that contract, so we have to continue with it. However, we're continuously negotiating terms. So there are those as well, and then we look at them and say where are the delays, who was responsible, and take the necessary action. But if you want me to break it down, we've got a whole breakdown and schedule, but on discussing it, I think at closure we said let's keep it to this limit, but there is a longer, by supplier, by
Yeah, I will be guided by you. I don't know how long you want to carry, but I think it's important that and if I can direct your attention, CEO, to expired contract, 9.3. We need a description of what happened in terms of the expired contract that we incurred, 9.3. A full description of what happened there. A paragraph, half a page,
can
plus.
Can you just do the suppliers with the detailed information on all of them, including the current one, what constituted these amounts per contract, when the amount, the company, who was involved, and what decision was taken. So you can send it to us, or Mr. Ben, and then we can then have a look at it and process it as a committee. If we think there are issues related to each one, we can then do so. Having the details.
Okay.
Thank you. So can we, is it possible for us to have it, say, for the end of next week? before the end of next week.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay, thank you. That takes care of procurements and contract management for customers' furniture. Consequence management will come from you. Now, asset management, the AG points out on page 97 of the annual report that proper control systems are not there. I think this was touched on earlier. Proper control systems to safeguard and maintain assets were not implemented through the financial year, as required by the PFMA. Can you give us any assurance or any comfort in why that happened? Was that Mr. Grenier? But we do know, obviously, Mr. Who's responsible for asset management in the period under review?
Yes, thank you. To the point.
Asset management falls under the finance department.
Ms. Yufa. Okay, well then, Ms. Teddy, can you comment on the comment by the AG?
I think the one key word in there is throughout the year. So, what we did was to fix up the inventory and the rotables, as we did, and we've been through this thing, conducted two counts ourselves, used a third party to value them and to assist in the counts to verify it, which got us to a closing balance that the auditors were happy with in terms of PPE and which is particularly the rotables and the energy. What we've done is we've put in place going forward ongoing monitoring of the system that tracks the rotables and the inventory. We're conducting again our own counts plus the third party counts to make sure that everything is updated timely and adjustments are processed as and when.
Maybe just to add also, this is all done together with the acting internal auditor, where they offer oversight and making sure that it's done properly. And feedback is actually fed back to EXCO and then also fed back to the auditor risk committee to make sure that what happened in the past doesn't happen in the future.
Okay. My final issue then is just about leadership, and I think I'd really like to hone in on the internal audit department. It's currently vacant, so you have an acting person there. When do you expect that to become finalised, and how do you plan to capacitate, or what are your plans to capacitate that particular section of your business? Is that just going to be one person? Are they going to have a team? How are you going to resource them, etc., etc.?
We've already resourced the area. We moved from one employee to two. No, actually, we used to have the head of internal audit with one employee. Then when she left, we added a second person to assist the acting internal audit. We've also spoken to the co-source to actually increase the co-source internal audit function to assist while we look for a proper candidate. We're waiting for the next board committee meeting to appoint the internal auditor, and we'll research that the person will start 1st of June. So, because we're in April now, we need to go finalize it with the board, make the offer, then hopefully by end of the month we'll finish that process, and then the month of May they are selling their notice. And this person is coming from outside, unfortunately. And then finalize the process by the... we'll have a person start first.
CEO, I noticed that on the executive management's triangle of managerial setup, internal audit is second down. Do you feel that a person with two employees, that is significant resource? That is sufficient resourcing for a department that is on the second tier under you and effectively should be the watchdog of the entire company. Is this something that you're just paying lip service to? Because for me, this is a very important factor. If you cannot pay lip service to internal audits. The internal audit look after everything on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. And when you do that, and the ATO will back me up here, wherever departments or entities do that, they don't come to Scarborough. Where they don't, they come and visit us. Please give us assurance of what you're going to do. And please tell me there are more than two people or three people. It's not enough, sir. It's not enough. Please give us some assurance.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable. Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to bring the history, we started with internal audit completely outsourced. Then again, in line exactly with what you're saying, Honorable Member, we agreed that we are going to bring it in-house, but we're not going to do it as a one go, we'll do it in a phased approach. So what we've done is, yes, I agree, there will be more people within that department, which is why currently we've got the co-source. So what we effectively have is we have the head of internal audits, and then you've got a whole other company that has all the resources that actually focuses on there's an audit plan, there's an internal audit plan, where we agree that part of the audit will be done.
I think the point here is about capacitating your internal
people.
That is what we want, and I think what you want is a commitment from you that yes, we're moving in that direction. As Comrade Bilfend has said, we want a capable state, capable as in having the capacity to run its functions.
So, straight answer. We were looking at it. It will be capacitated appropriately.
Let's
confirm.
You and I will have a pretty good handshake about that now, and if I see you again next year, I will be catching you much. Okay. And finally, what, as I said, I pointed out right in the beginning, I'm hoping that your internal audit, the Department of Revenue, is responsible for compliance. But unfortunately, you don't have your compliance executive here, but we really need, what actions are you going to take, either from the board side or from the CEO side, to make sure the contract... In fact, if I can make this easy, can you give us proposals, when you're seeing your list of all those contract irregularities, can you give us an undertaking on that side document, Chair, if you don't mind, as to what measures you're going to put in to make sure that that sort of contract irregularity as a whole does not happen again? If I could request that, Chair. All right, and Chair, then I'm done. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. Comrade, any follow-up? I'll start
with you,
then I'll go to
Ralph. Thank you, Jefferson. I just want to come to the issue of irregular expenditure. I'm compatible to the fact that they will provide the detailed report probably by next week. But I just wanted to make a follow-up on page 135 on the issue of the pharmacy FO. When you check the, I think it's the third paragraph, in terms of the why the expenditure was incurred by SLA Express, that there was a gender irregularity, and after a satisfactory explanation as to why it was occurred, and because there was no fraudulent or no wasteful transaction which had prompted the board to come to a decision to let go or to pass away the CFO. But I think the point I want to make as this committee, it has mentioned that the first amount, the 3.4 million, has been incurred because of those irregularities. What I don't seem to understand is that how is it possible that an entity will let go someone with that amount of money, the 1 million, I think it's the pension or what else, that settlement amount that you've added upon, that someone will cost the entity 3.4 million, even though it said it's not irregular, it's not wasteful, but I'm failing to understand what has have led the board to take that decision to say that we are letting go of this person, and after all that person is clear. But probably because of the reason that you've been able to find that it was irregular is because there was some legislation. Your supply chain management probably was floated in that regard. So I just wanted to get the phone from that one. Thank you.
All right, Ross?
Thank you, Chair. So the CFO, you've indicated that sort of funding is paid, I think, on the 17th of the month from South African Airways. And the critical issue of the day is in the public and the broader domain is that there might be a complete integration of South African Airways. Could you comment on this?
Well, the last one, let's leave it for the Deputy Minister. He got to comment on it. But let's talk to, maybe let's give Sengwa so he can respond to you on it.
Well, thank you, Chair, and thanks for that, because my question is really linked to the matters around the CFO, particularly now that we've also on item 49 and page 97 that the controls to safeguard and maintain assets were in the purview of the CFO. So the CFO, who all intents and purposes has been tripping from one instance of flouting regulations and everything else, and I'm still not sure I can grasp the extent of the details to which I've been presented with surrounding the departure, and I think that is a concern, because this CFO presided over all these findings not all of them, but 2012 when he arrived up to now. So, Chair, I would like to request that we get, as part of the submission that I'm going to make, a proper response, not the one we get now, because it's the summer of the summer. We need to get to the bottom of the circumstances surrounding the conduct and the behavior and the circumstances around the work of the CFO. Because all these matters are cited here, and I'll go back there. In one instance, it was not a settlement. In the other, it was a settlement, partial settlement. And we incurred so much losses, I use the word, quote-unquote, because of the CFO. But it's so easy to let him go. We want to get the charges that are going to be preferred. What did they contain? And what justification was provided to say when, even though there are charges there, it should be just let it go. Because I maintain the point that Honorable Patrick said this. Irregular expenditure, whatever the outcome, the fact that it's irregular, speaks to flouting due process, and it speaks to weak internal body, internal control, that you are able to, whatever the outcome, whether we can do anything, otherwise, it would not have been classified as an offense. After all that is said and done, why do you let this person go after they have caused us so much? And they are the ones who presided over this period, which has produced, as far as I'm concerned, findings which are way below any levels of satisfaction. So, Chair, it's part of the submissions, want to get to the bottom of it. Ben and Lumund. And to do that, I would say, so now I can't, and and a harm without any consequences. And then the chapter must put the people there. Thanks, Chair.
Go home. All right. I think it is more a recommendation on when you make submission. Comrades, did you have your hand up? Yeah, okay.
All right. Chairperson, my focus, I think more or less, it will be similar to what my two colleagues have spoken about under the expenditure management and what is cited there. With page 93 under government guarantee, my problem here, Chair, is when we talk about the guarantee and you think of the benefit of communities. If we talk about the guarantee which the SA Express has received, and you look at the benefit of the poor people out there, which it could have given them houses, clinics and all the things. And then you get told that there was wasteful expenditure. And you come to a point where the ages say 38 and page 99 on page 96. The processes of SMPPI were not adhered to. And then again we talk about another guarantee. Now I want a fair guarantee from the board sitting here, or the chairperson of the board sitting here, that this guarantee...
You also want a guarantee?
Yeah, I also want a guarantee. That we are not taking money from the poor people. That would have benefited. For it to be spent carelessly, ignored, everything just happens, come over. I want a guarantee that this is not going to happen again. Because every page you turn into is just, nothing was adhered to. Every procedure was not adhered to. Every procedure, financial procedures, auditing, everything is not adhered to. I want a guarantee that this is not going to happen again, because this money could have gone to poor people so that they can benefit from the government. Thank you.
It's not your money. Okay,
complete. Kekar. No, mine is on the instruction that you gave to the team on page 135, where you requested bonding regulations. You said we need details of each and every item. Now, I just want to amplify one important point, that on the non-procurement process followed, and also yes, on the SCM issues, I would request that we get information on the employees that were affected and what action was taken that is on those employees. Thank you.
Comrade, not your money. Yeah.
Could if we could get details of this guarantee, we need to in the terms and conditions, what is contained therein, so we can make an assessment which whatever is being done complies with this guarantee.
Okay, no, that's fine. Chair, can we respond to the questions, Comrade Kekane, Comrade Nte, and Comrade Shilan? And Ross, yours will be responded to.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, if I were to look at the questions, the three questions that were asked, we would need to provide details. They boil down to the issue of the irregular expenditure and the actions that the board would take in respect of the affected people. And as such, we would need to provide further detail in that regard in the list as provided. That's why I sum up all the three questions. But in so far as the undertaking from Honorable Shilan, I think it was from Honorable Nento. My apologies if I. I think for every board, we, and from an accountability point of view, I do take note of the comment, and I think we have an obligation to provide that guarantee to ensure that our internal controls in terms of what management does, we play our role, because we're employed by the shareholder to ensure that that we do not have to report this type of items. So I can give that guarantee that on behalf of my board that we have that responsibility and we take that accountability seriously. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you very much for the guarantee, but on top of it, I also want to take note that the agency says the accounting authority did not take effective steps. Make sure that you touch each and every person who does not adhere to anything. People must not get away with pride. without having set time for it?
Nothing,
of course. You know, I tell them that I'm so excited, I found it very excited. Are you saying to Parliament that they are quite willing to give that guarantee based on your salary, that you take it from me, so that we will get a guaranteed salary to pay back the money of the tax base? Is that what you are saying? Or you are just giving us a white paper or a blank check? Just give us something so that we can know when you come back, what that members of Parliament are saying to us. Don't come back here with the same, I mean, like, challenges that you have. And we are giving us a guarantee. If you don't pay your own salary.
Alright, I want to give Pastor a chance so he can respond to everything, and then we're done for the day.
You know, Mr. Boy and myself, we play rugby together, so we think very alike. And so, in comrade, in line with what you say, I think we should maybe link it to performance, 56%. You achieve 56%, you'll pay 44% of your salary. I think that's fair, huh?
Okay. Can we pass this complaint? I'm sure the minister is going to respond to this. Guarantee of the guarantee. But now, I just want to say, Commissioner, to the minister, I'm sure that you were listening attentively and noting down on issues that colleagues have raised. And as I said from the beginning, that you see, our major challenge is ensuring that the officials who are running, whether it's departmental entities, do so in the national interest. They have a sense of duty and responsibility to the state and to our people. And don't take decisions and actions that day. You know, make us suspect that they have criminal intentions towards the public. That cause us to be in these kind of situations where we either have to provide a guarantee, or we're told that, you know what, to turn this thing around, we need an equity partner. So we have to bring private capital, because was messed up this thing to a point where everything can't run it. It becomes a de facto situation. Deliberately, what to see situations that are running effectively and efficiently in the best interest of the country. I think, yes, we acknowledge that SAX has had some improvements from disclaimers to qualified audit opinion. And if you look at the audit issues, they are insurmountable. They are not possible. CEO and CFO just need to concentrate their effort and focus, ensuring that everybody with proper and rigorous monitoring processes and mechanisms. Internal audit, it has need to be strengthened. Your outsourced companies will never work themselves out of the job. So that the SAA, sometimes about 70 million down the line, they realize that they're not getting value for money. So companies will not work themselves out of a job. We need to have the internal audit capacitated, employ people, design a structure, and employ people, and let's see how it goes. I think that will solve a lot of these issues that have been raised. Well, let me hand over to you, Comrade.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much, colleagues. I think we are, all of us on the side, we are greatly enriched by the process, and we think this form of accountability is very important, so that our institutions can run better. We need proper governance and proper financial management, even for us to interact with financial institutions. Now, when we come to this kind of forums with this high level of accountability and rigor, I think it strengthens our institutions, it strengthens our democracy, it strengthens
it also strengthens us as a shareholder and as a department to do our work better. We really do appreciate you calling us to come to appear before this commission. We have taken note of all the matters that have been raised by colleagues. In fact, they are going to form part of the address to the AGM of the minister, which becomes a legal document of tracking all decisions taken. We are going to be taking, we have taken note of all the questions and the answers given. We would want out of that to develop a form of a project plan to keep track on what has been addressed, because we think that once we can deal with all of these matter satisfaction, I think the company will run smoothly. Also, at the macro level, we are working with National Treasury to explore the possibility of merging South African Express, Mango, and South African Airways. That process is being led by the Deputy President with the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Public Enterprises to look at the structure, the holding structure. We think that it should be completed soon, because we think that it will also help us to create better opportunities of leverage when the state-owned assets, streamline governance systems, and benefit from consolidated technical expertise. Which are the issues that the committee has raised? In certain areas, there are problems with technical expertise, but we want to leverage on all this technical expertise of Mango, South African Express, and South African Airways, and also the issue how do we deal with Mango. Because what has developed over time is a form of competition amongst the state-owned airlines, which sometimes is not that constructive. We need better coordination and better management of our state assets. We will be reporting to Parliament as soon as the process is completed, but the IMC sits almost every second week to receive reports on the progress made. But we would like to thank colleagues for the rigor. I think we are much more educated than we were before. Thank you very much.
Right, thanks, colleague Deputy Minister. Comrade, next week Tuesday it's Minister of Veterans. Minister of Veterans. Okay, thanks very much. The court is adjourned. Thank you.